Petri Dish is a product of Petri Dish Media, all rights reserved. Petri Dish is a science comedy podcast and should not be used as medical advice. Do not get medical advice from a podcast.
And therefore, as a free man, I take pride in the words, Ich bin ein.
Science! Science!
I know the human being and
science
can coexist peacefully.
This was our finest.
Guys, welcome to Petri Dish. I'm Nathan.
I'm Sean.
Hey, we're joined by Papa Mama in the house. Say hi to Papi Natalie up in here.
Yeah, Mama's too far from the mic, so she ain't saying shit.
Mama, say hi.
Woo!
Mama, Mama plays a schoolgirl tonight, I guess.
All right, we gotta move on from that.
Okay, well, anyway, guys, this episode, we're gonna talk about another sexy fermented thing. I think Sean kind of has a little backstory to why we're doing this subject. Why don't you tell us, Sean?
Yeah, so I was eating at this place called AOC.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Not named after Ocasio-Cortez.
Okay, so it's where you can actually eat sushi off of Congress people.
But yeah, I was eating at this place called AOC. It's famous. It's in Los Angeles.
Okay, cool.
And one of the people I was having dinner with turned to me at a random point during the meal.
Yeah.
And said, hey, you're a scientist. You know about koji, right? And I was like, nah, dude, I do not know what that word means.
Mm.
And he proceeded to tell me that you just gotta take that koji, you just rub it on anything.
Yeah.
Mm, you just rub, you get that umami flavor.
Right.
It gets right in there. You can rub it on the steaks.
Yeah.
You can try to make a salad dressing out of it. Not everything you do works.
Right.
That's what he learned.
Can't rub it on everything.
Sometimes you make something not taste good.
Right.
But you can use it for a lot of stuff. And he did not fully explain what the hell it was. So
right, you were intrigued though, because those are a lot of triggers for you, right?
Yeah, like, and I like cooking.
Flavor.
I like cooking, so I became very curious about what was going on with that, and so decided to look into it. So.
I actually know about this stuff from Andre, of course.
Shit. Wow,
Andre has done experiments with rubbing the koji in, is my understanding.
Oh yeah, what's he rubs it on?
Like steak and stuff. I think he's meat rubbed.
He did the meat rub, huh?
I think once. Yeah.
Well, we're gonna talk about that later in the episode. Actually,
yeah.
That's probably how we're gonna close it out, but. To start out, koji is basically kind of a little bit of a fermented guy, and yes, it can add a lot of umami. It's in a lot of traditional East Asian foods.
Right.
And so we're going to start out just discussing broadly what it is.
Right.
And then what fungus is used in the koji.
Yeah.
And then we're going to wrap it up with some of the traditional ways to use it, and then maybe a little bit of the fancier new ways that you can try to use it at home.
That's right. So guys, join us for another fermented episode of Petri Dish. This one's on koji.
So good.
Yeah, so I feel like koji is one of those things that, like, everything's packaged really cute in Japanese markets.
Yep.
So I never really knew exactly what koji was. Apparently, a fungus.
Yeah, you look in there and it looks like it's a cross between, like, rice and fuzzy and marshmallows.
Right.
But it is a fungus.
It's a fungus.
Koji, as a term, is Japanese.
Right.
And it describes pretty much any grain that has this fuzzy white fungus growing on it.
Yeah.
Typically, the grain is rice or barley, or soybeans. Those are the most common ones in Japanese cuisine, but you can really do pretty much any kind of grain.
Okay.
And basically, you need to take those grains, inoculate them with the spores of this fungus, grow it a little bit, and you get this really crazy flavor profile.
Mm-hmm.
Some nuttiness, you get that definitely, you get a big kick of umami.
Okay.
You can get some sweetness, but it also depends on what grain you're using. So there's a lot of versatility there. In terms of a lot of different kinds of koji out there in the world.
Okay.
And so in the past, we've discussed fermentation.
Right.
And in a few different contexts, because we had episodes about fungi.
Right.
People can look that up. But we also had episodes about kimchi. We had episodes about pickles and cheese, right? We've done a lot of shit. And, of course, booze stuff, right?
Yeah. But, of course, with a lot of fermenting, it's like you're kind of eating the byproduct of the thing that causes the fermentation, right? Like you actually have stages in pickling where you make sure all the fermented active, you know, whatever, molecules are dead, right? Like creatures.
Yeah, yeah. And also, in fermentation, we're almost always talking about either yeast
Right.
Which are fungi, but they're single-celled fungi, and so I feel like people think about them differently.
Yeah.
And bacteria.
Right.
Which are doing, like, the lactic acid or acetic acid for, like, making kimchi or vinegars or whatever. Right. Right.
So with the exception of some cheeses, this is one of those rare instances where you're just eating just straight-up fungus.
Yeah, and, like, we're talking, like, the fuzzy kind of fungus.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The stuff that you see growing on too much of your cheddar.
Yeah.
Right? You need to make a point with cheddar where, like, this was on Thanksgiving. Mom was like, oh, I've got cheese. I, like, need cheese for something. Mom brought out, like, a fuzzy brick.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't use that. She's like, cut it off. And I was like, look, I'm all about cutting off fungus off of cheese, but, like,
yeah,
the whole thing has been consumed by a fungus.
Yeah, you're like, this is inedible. And she was like, or yeah, it got real good.
Yeah,
she's
yeah,
like,
yeah, no, yeah.
This one is bad.
Mom tried to tell me, she's like, you know, there's lots of koji on here. Yeah. I was like, Mama, I know you didn't get koji in Santa Fe.
So koji, it's a real important component of a lot of the tasty East Asian foods, especially Japanese ones. Although, so koji is a term from Japanese, right? Right. There is a sort of equivalent thing in Korean food, an equivalent kind of thing in Chinese food.
Right.
But I will say the Chinese one, which is chu, and the Korean one, nuruk, are not exactly the same as koji, because koji is much more, the Japanese obsessed over it much more.
Right, and we'll discuss that in greater detail momentarily, right?
Yes, yeah. But out of koji, you get a slightly sweet and nutty flavor.
Right.
And a big boost of umami, so you can use it for all kinds of things where you want any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, well, I mean, you know, all that sounds very sexy. You kind of reference the fact that the Japanese have obsessed over it, whatever, mm-hmm. have really refined koji.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that implies to me that they've really thought about what the actual microbe is, right?
They've done a lot of science on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I assume a long, long time ago, koji was probably, you know, a mix of some fungi, maybe some bacteria in there, you know? Like, yeah, there's probably several things kind of mixed together.
It kind of depends on the creation myth you believe in, right? I mean, because Amaterasu brought the first koji as a massage power, right, for the first two humans. Yes. But then that chick died, went to the underworld, he couldn't bring her back. So the recipe for koji was lost for a while, and said they had to grow it.
That reminds me of, who was that? Orpheus and,
And
what's her name?
Erexipedes, right?
Wow, is that her fucking name?
No, it's not.
Anyway, wow, a deep cut to Greek mythology and Japanese mythology. That's very
both
good.
Both wrong.
So yeah, what was probably once a mix of things,
right?
Which is how modern nuruk and chu are,
right?
Are a mix of microbes. The Japanese have really refined it down to the point where, like, koji are typically cultures of a single species of fungi.
Right.
Okay. And there are actually several species of fungi to choose from to make koji, but typically they just use one at a time to make it.
Interesting.
They're almost all in the same genus, which is Aspergillus.
There's no funky hipster Japanese koji makers who, like, do a little bit of two of them?
It's interesting. I read a couple of papers where they took a couple of different species and, like, hybridized them.
Ah.
And then used that.
Uh-huh.
But I think those guys were definitely the hipsters.
Right, right, right.
And then I read some Korean papers that also used, like, hybrid koji.
Okay. So there's some hipsterism, but mostly the Japanese have refined their fungi
down to, like, monocultures.
Okay, excellent.
Aspergillus, which is the genus that has all of these koji in it, has a lot of other kinds of species that are not used for making koji.
The stuff we don't want to eat, traditionally, right?
Right. Aspergillus niger, for example, is a black mold that grows on produce sometimes.
Right.
Actually, you might have seen it on onion skin. So you know sometimes onion skin's got a little bit of, like, black stuff on it?
Right.
That's that mold, Aspergillus niger.
Yeah.
So, same genus, different species. It's associated with food spoilage.
It's interesting how that stuff is just as edible as koji, and just, just, like, the norms are different in our society.
It doesn't give quite the same umami flavor.
It doesn't give the same.
It gives a little
more, like, grave.
Yes, yes.
Cemetery.
Grave dirt.
Yeah, morbid flavor.
But I will say, just as an aside, the black mold growing on your produce is not to be confused with the black mold growing on walls in, like, water-damaged buildings and stuff
right.
like that. Those are two different kinds of black mold.
Okay.
And the black mold growing on walls can potentially be a little bit more bad for you.
Right.
Stachybotrys.
Okay.
But anyway, there are some species of Aspergillus that make toxins, okay? So Aspergillus is a pretty big category, and out of those, some species make toxins. Out of those toxins, one, aflatoxin, can be found on, like, nuts and shit. And sometimes you'll hear about, like, contaminated peanut butter. or something that has too much aflatoxin.
But Koji's an example of a nice aspergillus.
Yeah, these are all nice and cute species of aspergillus.
Right.
Okay, like aspergillus Orize, aspergillus Soje, Awamori, Kawachi. Those are all making different kinds of koji,
right,
typically for different products. Okay? And yeah, so these aspergillus species are all producing different enzymes, and that's kind of the whole reason why they're getting used, right? So like to dive into the science part of this, what are these guys actually doing to the food that's good?
Right.
Is they're producing enzymes like amylases, which break down starches.
Right.
And proteases, which break down proteins into amino acids.
Okay.
So that's where you're getting umami from.
Right.
Is the proteases break them down into like the glutamic acid.
Right. That's the nuttiness or the sweetness that you're tasting there.
Right. The amylases breaking down starch is where the sweetness is coming from.
Right.
Because it's freeing up sugars.
Right.
Right. And so, yeah. And then at that point, I think I have a very long list of different products and what kinds of these species get used.
Oh, we need to take a break then.
Yeah, we gotta take a break.
Gotta take a break. Because after the break, lists.
Right? That's great. Right. Yes. Very enticing.
Yeah.
My name is Jimmy Coconuts, and I'm here to talk to you about stamps! Yay! Stamps, stamps, stamps! If you're anything like me, you love stamps! Big stamps, little stamps, itty-bitty stamps. Yay! Stamps of famous people. Stamps of dead people. Stamps of seven little chipmunks twiddling on a branch. Yada, 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 on your father's ranch. You know the rhyme. I don't, because I love stamps.
Hooray!
And now, for a limited time offer on stamps.com, you can get all the stamps you need. You can access the post office and UPS shipping services without even taking the trip. Think about that! You can get discounts you can't find anywhere else. Up to 40% off USPS rates and 76% off UPS.
Yay!
All this and more you can access for the holidays. Think about that!
Ooh.
So this holiday season, go to stamps.com.
Yay!
Sign up with the promo code POD. That's P-O-D. For a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital stamp! No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, collect the microphone at the top of the page, and enter the code POD, P-O-D!
Yay!
This holiday season, get all the stamps you need with stamps.com!
Right, there we go. Nice. I mean, like, you know, we kid about lists, but this is actually the part that's kind of like, Turkish gourmands worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
This is the part they're going to care about. What microbes do we use? What monocultures do we use for different products? Like, what do we use for sake and shit like that?
Yeah. So Aspergillus oryzae is the one that's kind of used to make koji for sake and a lot of miso production. Okay. And I'm mentioning that one first because actually, if you look up koji on the internet,
right,
this is pretty much the only species they mention.
Right.
Okay, so like your standard koji, if you get it out there, this is the one that you get.
Mm.
But for koji aficionados out there, if you're listening to this podcast,
right,
I want you to know there are many other species that can be used.
All right.
And they have their different benefits and, you know, kind of issues. Right?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting that, so I guess if I was going to like rub koji on a steak,
yeah,
koji I'm getting is probably used for sake.
Yeah, yes.
All right, well, does that make any sense? I mean, would the different types of koji break down whatever's on the outside, the proteins on the outside of a steak better?
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
Sexy.
Actually, yeah. So there are some of these that are used more for the soybean side of things, specifically for making soy sauce.
Right.
Okay, because in soy sauce, one of the main ingredients in there, besides a little bit of wheat, is the actual soybeans.
Right.
Okay. And to get the soy sauce flavor, which is heavy umami flavor,
yeah,
you need to break down like all of that protein,
right,
into amino acids. So they actually use a different species than they would for making sake.
Yeah.
Because in sake, you're trying to break down the starches in the rice to feed yeast to make the booze.
Right.
Right. So that's much more sugar focused. So actually a different species, Aspergillus soje, is one that's used for making soy sauce.
All right.
And that one is much better at making the protease enzymes that break down protein.
Interesting.
So arguably, if I was going to be rubbing it on some kind of protein,
right,
I would prefer to use a koji that has Aspergillus soja in it.
Maybe it's too effective, though.
Well, so at the end of this episode, I'm going to be giving people a breakdown on how to rub it on steak.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that basically you keep it in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Because you don't want it to work too fast. It's true. You can over-treat your meat and it would become kind of gross.
Right. It does. Right? It does.
Yeah. So definitely, you know, there's some limits. Don't go too far.
Yeah. Don't over-treat your meat.
You'll learn some lessons.
Yeah.
Anyway, another set of species you can use is Aspergillus awamori and kawachi, and therefore making shochu.
Okay, cool.
And then, so making miso, like I just said that the soja species is better for breaking down soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
Miso has obviously got soybeans in there, right? But miso is usually a mix of the soybeans and then some kind of starch in there also.
You don't want to go all in.
There are some misos that are 100% soybean,
but
usually they lack certain elements of the complexity of like regular miso.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, you usually use some kind of koji that has a balance between the starch enzymes, like the ones to break down starches,
right,
and then the ones to break down protein. So that's why you use the orize strain.
Hey, what does koji just taste like alone? Because that hasn't done any of the breaking down yet. So none of the flavors that you associate with koji is actually present, right?
Well, so koji is the term for the grain with the stuff growing on it already.
So let's say you just sucked it right off the grain. You're like, right in the supermarket. What would that taste like?
I think you'd inevitably pull some of the grain off with it.
Okay.
Like basically, yeah. So
it really just tastes like the grain.
Yes. So spores of this fungus probably doesn't taste like much.
Right.
Maybe it has like a little bit of some kind of umami flavor in there, but it probably doesn't taste like very much.
Okay.
But once they've actually grown on the grains of rice or barley or whatever, it will have a sweet, nutty flavor.
All right.
With umami elements to it. So you can buy koji at the Japanese supermarket frozen or whatever, break it up into bits and rub it on a steak. And I mean, like you could try to eat it right then and there.
Right.
It'll be interesting to say the least.
There we go.
But yeah. So, another use for this kind of fungus is for bonito flakes.
Okay. Yeah.
Which are these dried fermented fish for people who don't know. Mm. Right. That fermentation is done with the Aspergillus mold, except in this case, it's its own species, Aspergillus glaucus.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this was very Japan focused, and that's because koji is Japanese.
Right.
And it's all these really specific species. But all of these products have analogs outside of Japan.
Sure.
Right? Like, doenjang in Korea is a fermented soybean paste, very much akin to a kind of miso.
Right.
Right? Makgeolli is pretty similar to unfiltered sake.
Mm-hmm.
Shochu is basically just soju.
Right.
I mean, they almost sound the same too, right?
Yeah, sure.
But in Japan, koji, it's very refined. It's just a very specific thing. Whereas Nuruk in Korea, it does have the Aspergillus fungus in it, but it also has yeast in there. It also has bacteria in there.
Interesting.
And so all of those things actually make it so that when you use Nuruk to make soju or to make makgeolli, it's actually a much more complex mix of kind of reactions going on.
Interesting.
So simultaneously with the Aspergillus breaking down the starches, you have yeast immediately using that to make alcohol, right? Like it's all happening at once,
right,
in that reaction. Whereas if they were making sake, it kind of happens more discreetly. Mm-hmm. So they do end up being kind of different products because they're coming in from different directions. So Nuruk is much more environmental also. It's not a standardized. Mm-hmm. Nuruk in different parts of Korea are pretty different from each other.
Interesting. But I mean, like, doenjang is also mass produced. So I guess that company just has its own proprietary nuruk or something?
Yes, and they can also use some of the, like, they can do batch-to-batch doenjang, basically.
Well, and they have, like, it's like how vinegar has a mother, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, simultaneously, I think people would argue that, like, one company's doenjang is not the same as another company's doenjang.
People argue in the supermarket.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is because it's actually a pretty complex natural product in that sense.
Whereas, like, all the different prices in Japanese market are a lie. Just the fucking same,
you guys are liars.
Yeah.
And then I guess I also found out that there's a another species and genus even that makes a certain kind of koji, red koji, called Monascus purpureus,
and that's used by some other cultures though.
Yeah, Chinese and Filipino cuisine. It's called red mold rice in those cultures, and it's mostly made to add red color to dishes.
Oh,
but also to make Chinese traditional yellow wine.
Oh.
Huangju.
Have you had that?
Nope.
Oh, shit.
Sounds good.
I think I get that. Okay. Let's take a break because now we're gonna get into some of the important stuff for our home cooks.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna make your own koji.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Sounds good.
Hey guys, this is Jimmy Coconuts, and I'm here to let you know that earlier ad, that wasn't a fake ad, all right? It's a real ad for stamps.com. Okay, stamps, they're really important. If you're like me, you love stamps. They funded the American Revolution, all right? Benjamin Franklin, he designed stamps, and thanks to that, we're a free nation. Iran-Contra, all right, Iran-Contra, that was funded by stamps. Enough of that. That's enough said about that. You know, stamps, really important. You know, don't forget this holiday. I mean, how are you going to get your shit to your relatives if you don't have stamps, dum-dum? Okay, so you got to get stamps, all right? I know this is 21st century. You're like, you're a millennial. You're like, I don't get stamps, okay? Dum-dum, you need stamps still, all right? So go to stamps.com, get stamps, all right? I'm Jimmy Coconuts, all right? And you got to get stamps, all right? That wasn't a fake ad. That was a real ad. Go to stamps.com. Promo code POD, P-O-D. You can't email a coconut. So stamp that nut with stamps.com.
All right, so Sean, let's imagine I have about $10 million to start up an American koji production factory.
Excellent.
How do I make this homebrew koji? I mean, that it's not homebrew koji, but that's what it's on the label.
Yeah.
Because that's how you get suckers.
Because you're a liar.
Yeah, it's a free-range koji.
Yeah, so a certain element of it is kind of easy, okay? You need the stuff to feed the koji, okay?
Okay.
So that's some
those
kind
are
of
the grains.
Yeah, exactly. You can use rice, you can use barley, you can use soybeans. But you can use fucking any other grain you want. You could do wheat, corn, farro.
Yeah.
Which is probably a...
Probably bad idea.
I mean, I don't know. You could do it anyway.
Yeah, those are islands, Sean. I mean, so that doesn't have an important impact?
Well, it'll change the flavor of the koji.
Right.
For sure.
But you could hypothetically do it with any of these and just you would just have a slightly different koji.
Yeah, and it's no longer hypothetical. Like, yeah. There are plenty of hipsters in the West
right.
who have, like, consciously decided to try to make koji with as weird a grain as they can figure out.
Right.
Like quinoa koji and stuff like that.
I was about to say.
Yes, literally. Yeah. And so, because of that, what they found is that, like, legitimately, you can make this... And they do taste different from each other, which is totally understandable.
Are any of them like real donkey shit?
I haven't tasted any of them.
Okay.
I assume most of them are.
People are like, all of them are great, except farro. Don't do farro. Yeah. Don't rub koji on Ronan farro.
So I'm not sure. Yes, please don't.
Yeah.
He's a human being.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's gonna write a book about it.
So you do need to process the grain before you do this, though.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason why is that, I mean, first of all, I don't know if you guys have seen a field of grain before. But those little guys,
no.
they got shit on them.
Yeah.
They got like the chaff.
Yeah. You gotta separate the wheat from the chaff. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
These guys are 100% chaff.
Yeah.
So yeah, you need to bust that stuff off, okay? And the reason why is because this fungus, you want to give it nice conditions for growing, and if it has to get through, like the husk, in order to get to the good stuff inside,
right?
It's not gonna do it.
Right. Like, you're not like pro drilling.
Right.
Fungi. Right. They need to be right on it.
They will give zero shit and then just not grow. So you want polished rice. You know what I mean? Like you want it to be like the white rice.
Right.
You can do it with brown rice, but it's not as easy.
Right.
It'll take more work. So
it's kind of like how with beer, you want to get the grains going a little bit. You want to germinate them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That'll get you, you know, kind of like not denaturing. That'll get the yeast working on the grains faster.
Yeah.
It's a similar thing. You want to cook the grains a little bit, make it easier for your koji to get in there.
Right. So, like, for example, if you're using rice, first thing you do is you wash the rice a shitload.
Yeah.
Okay? And then you drain it really well,
mm-hmm.
and then you steam that rice.
Oh.
Just enough to get it actually a little al dente.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to cook it, not to the point where it'd be palatable to you and me. Okay?
Yeah.
So we're not making some kind of tasty rice right now.
Right.
You just want to cook it a little bit so that the inside soften up a little bit so that the starch is more accessible. But you do not want too much water. If your rice is really wet and it's cooked really well or something like that, too much water will actually make it harder for that fungus to compete with some bacteria.
Jeez.
Because the bacteria can definitely hop in there and start eating that rice real fast. Okay.
Right.
So you want it to be like kind of al dente.
Okay.
Now, none of that required $10 million. The
right.
part where you could use some of that $10 million is setting up a nice environment for the fungi to grow.
Right.
Okay. So you need to let the grains cool down from the cooking until they're like in the neighborhood of body temperature. Like we're talking 80s to 90s degree Fahrenheit. Okay. Not too hot, not too cold.
Right.
The fungus leans a bit more toward making amylases to break down sugars
mm-hmm.
at higher temperatures. Whereas if they live in lower temperatures, they lean a little bit more toward proteases.
Right, and this will again impact the flavor of the koji that you ultimately produce.
Right, and can be important depending on what grain you're growing them on.
Right.
Because some grains are more protein heavy than others.
Right, and the quality of the product you ultimately want. Right, yes, if you're just like home brewing.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, doesn't really matter that much. Yeah. You know what I mean? But if I had 10 million bucks, this would be climate controlled. And you'd have it at a very specific temperature.
Right.
Okay. The fungus will eventually make its own spores, but the spores don't taste very good. So actually, you want to kind of control the temperature and timing so that they don't get to the point where they make the spores. You know how when food goes bad, you might see like a white mold, but then in the center of that white mold, you start seeing some black parts to it?
That's the spores.
Those are spores.
You've left that too long in the fridge.
Right. So these species of Aspergillus...
You left that cheesecake in the fridge so long that it's breeding.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And those little black spores... Any kind of breeze, you can blow that all over the place.
Yeah.
Okay, so you gotta be careful. Yeah. Oh. It's not great. It's not great. Anyway.
It's kind of amazing that they grow in refrigerated temperatures.
Yeah, there's some hardy fucks.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not marvel too much at that.
So the Aspergillus here, specifically the Oryze, the one that's kind of most common for making koji.
Yeah.
That one does not turn black when it's sporulating. It turns kind of a yellowy green sort of color.
We don't like that.
Yeah, preferably not very much of it.
Yeah.
Okay. If there's a couple of spots on it, on your koji here and there,
yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. But if it's like uniformly yellow,
yeah,
you fucked up.
You fucked up.
You left it in there for too long, or it was too warm.
Yeah.
And they just went into sporulating really fast.
Okay. Okay.
You want the fungus to be somewhere around 90% humidity in this little kind of environmental chamber you built.
Right.
Okay. And if we were being really fancy, I would have the humidity slightly decrease after the first day of kind of making the koji.
Okay, now we're $12 million. We're a couple million over budget.
Yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Okay, you want to make some tasty, bougie koji?
I want to make the best koji in Portland.
That's right. That's right. Believe me, there's a lot of people making fucking koji in Portland. Believe me.
Yeah.
Anyway, for rice, for like white rice, something really simple as a substrate, you can have your koji after around 40 hours. Okay. So not that long. It doesn't take that long to set up the koji. Because if you go for much longer than that, it's going to start sporulating.
Yeah. I mean, hell, if you hire Oompa Loompas to do it, you didn't even do that much work.
That's a good point.
That's a good point.
For some of the harder substrates for it to grow on, like soybeans, for example, sometimes you got to wait like 50 hours, so a little bit longer than 2 days.
Did anyone do soybeans like traditionally? I mean, you mentioned rice and barley as the traditional grains. Did anyone do soybean, or is that kind of more of a modern thing?
No, they do. So, for example, the kind of miso that is only soybeans.
Yeah.
It has no wheat or barley or rice added.
Right.
That kind of miso has like cooked soybeans and then also soybean koji added as the starter, right?
So
it's fully soybean, but the koji was soybean and the rest of the soybeans were there too.
That makes a lot of sense.
But it is harder to make soybean koji. It's not as easy, a substrate, because it doesn't have as much sugars in there.
All right.
Yeah, and then after that, you can freeze that koji.
Jeez.
And then you can take it out if you want to make miso, or if you want to do some fancy experiments with other kinds of food.
Right, like you got a really fancy one listed right here. That's fucked up.
Yes, well, so first let me, as a lead into that segment, I want to say, one of the interesting ones that I saw was somebody added koji to ricotta cheese.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about this big one.
I'm talking about ricotta cheese.
Yeah, so they added it to ricotta cheese.
Yeah.
And you guys know what ricotta tastes like.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like that.
Yeah.
But they added koji to it, and they gave it a few days, and then they pressed that cheese down so that it was like nice and hard.
Jesus, what an affront to nature. But what was it like?
And then it was kind of like Parmesan.
Okay, in a good way? Like, was it like Parmigiano Reggiano D.O.P.? Or was it like Parmesan and Wisconsin?
So, it didn't have the kind of... So, it didn't have the crystals or anything like that, right?
Mm, okay.
I think texture-wise, it was not like Parmesan.
Okay.
But it had that kind of nuttiness that that Parmigiano Reggiano has.
Damn it, Sean. I want all crystal, no nut.
No, come on. Yeah. You don't...
I don't want that nut.
You want that nut.
I don't want it.
If there's anything I know about you...
You can say I don't want that nut. I don't want it no more.
That you like a nut.
but okay, that's pretty amazing. So you took koji, put in ricotta, and these fucking perverts made like a semi-hard cheese.
Yeah, and I think that the big thing there is some of the more mature cheeses out there have more of that umami and nutty flavor, right?
Right.
Younger cheeses don't have them.
Right.
But because Koji kind of specializes in creating that umami flavor, you can add that in to a young cheese and get it to mature much faster than Parm takes to mature, right?
Can vegans eat Koji?
Yeah.
What's the deal with protists and fungi in, like, the vegan worldview?
They're not animals.
Well, that's true, but they're sentient. I mean, like, especially when they conglomerate.
Look, I've played Alpha Centauri.
Yeah.
I know what the fungus can do.
Great Sargasso Sea. Okay, well, anyway. Are we taking a break, or are we just hopping into it?
I think we overbraked.
Okay, whoopsie, we overbraked.
Let's just do it.
Okay, we do it. All right, so now that we got our nut cheese out of the way, we got to talk about what we really care about, which is meat. Everybody knows in the hipster world that you can rub Koji on steak.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I missed this. I'm not hipster enough. Well, so this blew my mind when I first read about it.
Okay, well, let me explain it to you, Sean.
Okay.
Step one, rub meat.
Yep.
Step three, profit.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
What happened in between?
Well, you're the scientist. You tell me.
Oh, okay. That's my turn. Look, Koji does a really good job breaking down the proteins in soybeans.
Right, so someone had the epiphany.
Right.
What else has protein?
Steak. Okay. And actually, breaking down protein is part of a process we already do to some steaks, especially the fancier ones.
Right, by dry aging them.
Yeah, dry or wet aging.
Yeah.
Both of those are supposed to help break down some of the proteins into more amino acids and stuff like that.
Have you ever moist aged a steak?
I don't know.
Here's what you do. You give it to me. You don't ask questions for 24 hours. And then the next day you come over and eat my steak.
I gotta tell you, I hate you saying moist aging. You know what I mean? That's a serious bummer. I'm glad that hasn't, like, reached the lexicon out there in the world.
I'm bringing it, dude.
Moist aging is very sad.
Yeah, dude.
I do not like that at all. Okay, so the dry aging process for steak does indeed break down proteins in the steak.
Right.
And also dehydrates the steak a little bit.
And explain really quickly, just in a rough sketch, what is dry aging a steak?
Yeah, so there's a couple of processes. First of all, you keep the steak in a fairly dry environment, like kind of hanging in a dry environment, typically. And the steak is dry enough that you don't have kind of like a huge influx of like spoilage growth.
Right.
Right? But the dryness in the air draws some of the water out of the steak, so the steak kind of dries a bit.
Yeah.
But also it typically builds up a surface of, like, mold and stuff growing.
Right, right.
The mold growing on the surface of steaks typically is not aspergillus.
Right.
Typically some other, like, penicillium and stuff like that.
Right.
A lot of the same fungi that grow on, like, camembert and things like that. Right. So you do get some stuff growing on the surface of dry-aged steaks.
Right. And, I mean, and then people just cook it like a normal steak, and it's supposed to have, like, a slight blue cheesy kind of quality about it, right?
Yeah, and it's supposed to sear really well. The fats are supposed to be really amazing in it, right?
Yeah.
Like, so a good marbled steak becomes excellent with dry-aging.
Right.
So there is, in fact, a way you can use koji to kind of fast
quickly
dry age.
Do the same thing.
Right, because dry aging typically takes a while.
It takes a long time.
We're talking about months and months, right?
Even years or decades.
Sure, you can dry it. Well, you can dry age a steak for like a year or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy. But you can do it fast with koji.
Right.
So basically, you take a steak you got at your local supermarket, okay? Don't buy a dry aged one for this.
Yeah.
Because you're just wasting your money.
Yeah, that's true.
So
it's overly aged now. It's like Dune.
It's probably gross, honestly.
Yeah.
It probably gets kind of leathery and weird on the outside.
Yeah.
So then you pat it dry, you buy some frozen koji at the Asian supermarket, or you make your own, whatever, I don't judge, either way.
Yeah.
You take that out, it looks like a crumbly brick of fuzzy white rice.
Yeah.
You can toss that in the blender and turn it into a powder.
Mm.
Okay, so at that point, that already has, they were previously frozen, but they had grown up little fungus stalks all over it, right?
Right.
And they've already produced a bunch of amylase, they've produced a bunch of proteases, so the enzymes are all there already.
Mm.
So then you take that powder, you rub it all over your steak. You gotta rub it.
Yeah.
Okay? You put it on one of those wire racks. You shove it in the refrigerator. You kind of turn it every once in a while. And you leave it in there for like 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you take it out, you wipe all of the koji shit off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? At that point, you'll probably see a little bit of moisture on there because the koji will have pulled some moisture out of the steak.
Yeah, get that off.
Yeah, you kind of get that off there. And then sprinkle on some salt and you sear that shit.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'll find that it browns really fast.
Right.
Okay, so you'll get like a really nice crust on that sear.
Okay.
And one of the reasons why is because you're having a lot of that Maillard reaction, which we've talked about before recently. When did we talk about that? We had some kind of cooking episode.
Wasn't it still about beer?
Yeah, it was the beer roasting
the grains. And
exactly.
Shit? Yeah.
And so the Maillard reaction in this case is amino acids reacting with reducing sugars. Mm. Both of those things are made by the koji.
Right.
Okay. And so you have an abundance of that on the surface of the steak where the koji was. And so the steak will sear up beautifully, very, very quickly.
I mean, but the important question, right? Jimmy Giordano, does it taste good?
It's got flavor!
Okay, does it have good flavor, though?
Yes, so that is interesting, because apparently it has a lot of the same sorts of flavors that you get from a dry-aged steak,
mm-hmm.
except maybe a little bit less of a blue cheesy kind of flavor,
yeah,
and a little bit more of a sweetness to it.
Strange.
Okay, because the koji itself is bringing in a little bit of starch that's getting broken down into sugar. So you get a little bit of sweetness on there.
Yeah, I guess Jimmy and Giordano, we got to get them on the case. Got to have them make a koji steak.
We got to do it head to head. Regular steak, dry aged steak, koji steak.
Dry aged steak. I don't have that kind of time.
No. We'll buy the dry aged steak.
Oh, okay. I see. All right.
From Italy.
Fair enough. Okay, so we'll get the three steaks. We'll do a competition.
Yeah, or we'll have Jimmy and Giordano do it.
Yeah.
We're not them.
We'll call them up. All right.
Just to be clear, we are not those two people.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So I mean, I didn't know anything about this koji stuff, but I like it. I like it. It's very interesting. Using a filamentous fungus for kind of kick-starting fermentation is an interesting take on things.
I like a lot of the things that it makes, even though now I think they're all a little grosser than I used to
before this episode. Yeah. I found out that, like, there's a lot of complexities into, like, different kinds of soy sauces and different kinds of miso and stuff like that.
I was reading a book on the impact of colonization on Korean food in the 1900s,
uh-huh.
and one of the chapters is about the death of domestic soy sauce production in Korea, in large part because Japan had figured out a really successful industrial process.
Mm-hmm.
That was just like, simple, and B, more importantly, the format that they imported because they were in charge.
Yeah.
And that kind of overtook the Korean domestic market. In the context of this episode, it actually makes a lot of sense, right? Because they had refined the flavor palette thanks to refining which monoculture to use, whereas Korea had not achieved in any system of standardization yet.
Yeah. Right. And I do wonder what method Koreans traditionally use to make soy sauce, because also in the process of making like doenjang, there is a liquid that forms that is very reminiscent of soy sauce.
Right.
To the point where like you could probably replace that for soy sauce in recipes, people wouldn't even know, right?
Yeah.
So I do wonder if like they were making a bunch of doenjang and then also making this sauce, and then the Japanese come in with their shoyu and we're just like, we're making gobs of this shit.
Yeah, I feel terrible because I used to know, actually. It was interesting because it was one of those things where, like, the production, in as much as it had no standardization and no industrial, it was, like, labor-intensive, shitty to do, and not necessarily better, right?
Yeah,
because it was just different, right? The flavor profile was different.
Yep.
So it died out. In theory, it used to be diverse in the same way that kimchi was diverse.
Oh, my God.
But I tragically don't remember the actual process because it was, like, 6 years ago.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
I don't even remember last week.
Yeah. It's hard.
I don't even know.
I certainly don't remember the contents of last week's episode.
It was like treason shit or something.
So
right?
On that note, it's afforestation.
Oh, shit.
Sargassum, actually, also, if you rub koji on sargassum, still tastes like sargassum.
Yeah, there's just really nothing you can do with sargassum.
Yeah, hey, it's a lot of nutrients, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
it's
if you take, like, them sea algae shits and you, like, wash them until they're, like, just a gel.
Oh.
You eat them up.
Yeah.
A lot of nutrients.
You just wasted a lot of water, though. We don't got that in California.
Oh, we take it. we take what we want in California, baby. All right, well, anyway, guys. So thank you for joining us for our fermentation koji episode.
Yep.
Thank you, Stacey Song, our sound lore and engineer.
Yep, and Brian Allen for artwork.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sean, for being my brother.
What, are we doing me?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you, Mama, for joining us today in studio.
Yep.
You did watch BTS during our recording, but we still love you.
Yeah. Yeah, we're thinking Courtney and Street Griff and Andy and everything like that, right?
Yeah, video production crew.
Yes, for the upcoming vidja.
Yeah,
be on the lookout.
Yeah.
We have an email address, petridishpod@gmail.com. We have a Twitter account, @dishpodcast. And we have a Patreon, patreon.com/petridish, where you can give us $1 a month. Because Nathan and I say words.
Mm-hmm. Guys, thank you for joining us. Ich bin ein Koji. And beyond.
took a few takes, but we got it. We got it, guys. You know?
Always done?
What?
Always done?
Yeah, like, we're still recording right now.
You're not done yet, Mom.
Mom, are you drunk? This shit's still going.
Okay, guys. Talk to you next week. Have a good one.
Bye.